business today will be, we'll begin with House Bill 516, which is introduced by Representative George Ann Lincoln, followed by HJR 58, and then, if we have time, we will discuss House Bill 290, which I have introduced. And at this time, I'd like to ask Representative Lincoln to make the presentation, please, on House Bill 516.
And we are on.
Yeah, we are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have before us HB 516, and I believe that you just received a couple more position papers on that. I hope that you've had time to look at some of the position papers under your tab 2 and had an opportunity to review them. Much of what I will say in my opening statements reflect what those school districts are saying and have been saying for some time. One of the small school districts in my house district excuse me, currently employs 19 and a half teachers. Two-thirds of those teachers are tenured. This district is looking at cuts in their FY93 budget that will require them to eliminate 4 to 6 certified teaching positions. Concern that replacing non-tenured teachers with tenured teachers places them in a position of deciding what will the band teacher teach if band is cut? What will the counselor teach? Who will teach the high school science if that non-tenured science teacher is not retained? Would first grade or early childhood be taught by tenured high school teachers certified for secondary education? Or high school be taught by tenured teachers certified for primary education? This is an example of the dilemma school districts in our state are facing. Too often, teachers are placed in grade levels or subject areas for which they have insufficient preparation. In times of tight budgets, Alaska's 10-year laws are tying the hands of school boards who, as elected officials, representatives of the community, have the responsibility of providing quality education for our students and making sound decisions about the best use of their resources. What is best for the students? That's the question that should be driving program decisions by school districts. House Bill 516 would amend the tenure statutes to give school boards the authority to release tenured teachers for budgetary and fiscal changes. Under current law, coupled with the hard funding realities with which we are all too familiar, districts are forced to make decisions that are not always in the best interest of children. Another small district which wrote in support of this bill had this to say: this year, with the influx of elementary students, the school board and parents identified the need for lowering the pupil-teacher ratio in the primary program. We can place a high school physical education teacher into a first grade classroom or seek more funds. When budgetary or fiscal circumstances of the school district have changed, we must allow communities, through their elected school boards, the flexibility to make adjustments to their programs based on programmatic needs. And Mr. Chairman, I am pleased that Commissioner Covey could be here this morning. I understand that he has a 9 o'clock appointment, and I would ask the chair if we could have Commissioner Covey give his statement.
Thank you, Representative Lincoln. We will hold questions. Do you need something?
Yes, go ahead. Are we on teleconference?
We are on teleconference.
Mr. Teleconference? I was just teleconference, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, all right. Is that written, that statement you just made, is it written? I'd like to copy that if I could, if it's all right with you.
Most certainly.
Thank you.
Commissioner Covey, would you come forward, please, and give your testimony?
That's good.
Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning. My name is Jerry Covey. I'm Commissioner of Education. I'm here to offer you a department's perspective on House Bill 516, or the position of the Department of Education, which I believe we have transferred to you already. As you'll notice from our written statement, the department supports the bill because it allows school districts more options when dealing with budgetary shortfalls and provides a greater degree of local control. The bill, as written, provides for release of tenured teachers if the employer determines that a reduction in staff is necessary due to a decrease in enrollment or due to budgetary or fiscal circumstances of the school district. As we move into the 90s, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and we are confronted with the issues of declining revenue of a public education system that is continually growing at a fairly high percentage rate. And as the state struggles with the issues of providing adequate funding to education and other issues, it becomes a greater burden upon local school districts as they reorganize to address their current needs to keep the program foremost in their minds and to be responsive to the program needs of their students. What we have currently is we have a system in which tenure overrides program needs. And I believe that equates to students paying the price ultimately. The school districts have no other place to go to reduce costs in many cases other than to actually eliminating programs. Or they're forced to make decisions that cause them to lay off non-tenured teachers and put tenured teachers in program areas for which they may have not had adequate training in that content area to teach. So it's a very difficult situation. I think that the bill, it's a straightforward statement that Representative Lincoln read earlier, describes it to a key. And as revenues decline, I believe we must keep children foremost in our actions. And the importance of programs for students must override the tenure rights of employees. Pure and simple, that's it. That's why we support the bill, and we think it's a piece of legislation which will have a positive effect on students throughout our state, because as you're well aware, this is not an urban or a rural problem. It's a statewide issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate you coming, taking the time to come down this morning. Representative Betty Davis, you have a question?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I understand that you support the bill, but I'd like for you to give me what you see as the downside of this. You said the department is in support of it. Now, I know that Alaska 2000 have people that are working on many areas of concern, and it's going to be put into a package that's going to be presented to the legislator next year. This is one of the issues that's being dealt with in many of those various committees at this point.
Yeah.
I see this bill in its present form creating two classes of teachers, two classes of people. You'll have those that can stay there simply because they're going to be grandfathered in, and you got those others that won't be able to stay because they'll have to come out because of this bill. I know that there is a need for some changes to be made. I have no problem with that. But I think we have to be fair about this. At this point, when we are downsizing our budget and know that everybody's going to be in a chaotic situation, this might not be the proper time to do that. And I would like for you to share with me what you would see as a downside to this particular bill, even though you say it might give flexibility. I believe that it will give more flexibility than is actually needed for administrators and school boards, because I believe that they do have some flexibility. I believe that they should have more. But I don't think they should have in their hand the key to saying, okay, just because you're tenured and we want to get rid of you, this bill will allow that. I don't think that should be. And I know there have to be some downsides to this.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis, I think on most issues you can find a downside. And certainly the position of the department is that we do not want to hold anyone at a disadvantage or see this misused. Regardless of what type of structure we create or you create at the legislative level, we cannot protect against abuse and misuse. We cannot legislate the perfect system. And we, I think, have ample evidence of that. What we can do is create circumstances, or through legislation, create a structure that, judiciously used, will meet the needs of our public education system. It may be that as the current system is misused by different groups at times, that this would be too. I'm not so concerned about that. At this point, I think if people do that, then they're going to have to directly face the consequences. How this relates to Alaska 2000, it's a real interesting question. What I'm finding with Alaska 2000 is that we are working on this and many other issues, and we would like to put them in a package and come back to the legislature with them. In spite of that, time goes on and needs are here currently, and the legislature has and continues to find a need to respond to those without waiting until next year. As they do that, it's been our position to try to respond to each of those individual issues and simply to say that, you know, we are working on them. If you need to address them in the interim, we will be responsive to those needs. We will try to give people position papers on bills. We will try to tell them whether we like them or dislike them. And so that's what we're doing in this case. I believe that there are many things that can be done and that will help address all of these problems. And I believe that we can come up with a balanced approach to it. In the interim, this individual bill, I think even though it may have a downside potentially, I think it has an upside. And therefore, we're supportive of it.
Representative Georgiana Lincoln.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'll have my staff hand out a, which I just now got, from the Legislative Council, Teresa Kramer, from the Legislative Affairs Agency, the Legal Services. What I was trying to do is under page 2, is that it, what Representative Davis spoke of is those that are tenured on line 4, it says this act does not apply to a teacher who had acquired tenure rights before the effective date of this act. What I was really attempting to do was not to have a grandfather clause in there. And I did seek legal counsel on that and was told that it was not possible to do that. And then I asked for that to be in writing, and unfortunately I just received that. But I think you'd note on paragraph 2, about 1, 2, 3, 4 lines down, the Alaska Supreme Court has not been asked to rule on whether our teacher tenure laws create contract rights, but I believe that they would follow the reasoning of the United States Supreme Court, blah, blah, blah. My attempt was to correct that section there, and I still intend to, as this moves along, to not have the grandfather rights in there. But at this point, the bill is before the committee in this fashion, and it does go to Labor and Commerce next, so I will see if there is a way that we can have that particular clause removed, because I know that that is a concern by the school districts, too, that they don't want the grandfather rights in.
Thank you, Representative Lincoln. Representative Sherry Davis.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of things. First of all, it seems to me that Section 2, what that would actually, the effect it would have, assuming this bill were passed in its current form, would be to not allow a district to actually lay off a teacher for 3 years from now, because first they'd had to, it would have had to been a new teacher that acquired tenure rights. Well, I take that back. It could be somebody that acquired tenure rights this year. Could be, okay, so you're talking about just the very newest teachers,
right,
within the next, and then those teachers after 3 years from the date of this bill passing would be subject to this, but anybody beyond that had been hired previous to that would be not. And I guess I'm just, I wanted to make that point because it seems to me that if the issue, the object of this, and I think it is, I believe it is the idea of we're in a fiscal crunch right now, what's going to happen to those districts who are unable to meet their payrolls over the next year or two. This may not be doing what we're intending to do.
Representative Lincoln.
If I might respond, and Commissioner, certainly I would ask that if you could, if you have anything to add to it as well. But while that is true, and that for those who are tenured now, the way it is written under Section 2, which I am attempting to get corrected, the tenured teachers would not be affected by this bill as current.
Mm-hmm.
But if we wait until next year, we're faced with the same thing again. And we're all hoping for a $63,000 instructional unit. It might turn out to be 60. Who's to say next year what it will be? And we have to address this now. And I think that we've seen in this committee that we're not holding back on educational issues just because we have the Alaska 2000 in process, that we have to be responsible for, especially, I think, our education in the state of Alaska and having quality education for our students. And this certainly, with the tenured laws as they are, does not provide for quality education when we have a PE teacher teaching first and second grade grades out there, which is happening now.
Thank you, Representative Lincoln. Any further questions for the sponsor?
Do we have people to testify?
Yes, we have.
I had a couple of things that I wanted to say, but how do you want to handle that? Do you want me to, would you like me to speak now and wait for the testimony?
The commissioner has to leave. He has 9 o'clock.
I don't have another question.
Let's take questions for Commissioner Covey first. For Commissioner, do you have something?
Well, I do have an additional statement, Mr. Chairman, if I may, and that is that it's given what has led up to these events. It's not been possible, I don't believe. It's been a practical thing for school districts to deliberate upon granting tenure to teachers in the previous years based upon this potential shortfall, based upon the fact that they may find themselves in this situation down the road. And I don't think if they had done that, it would have been in the best interest of their workforce to do that. I think that for most school districts have acted in most cases in a very responsible way. I believe, to my knowledge, almost all of them have, in making determinations of tenure for teachers. And I think they've acted in good faith. They find themselves in a very difficult situation at this time because the time that we've all known was coming is, in fact, here. And we have to be responsive to that time and to the realities we're faced with. So, I don't think it was poor judgment that led up to this problem on the part of school boards by granting tenure. I think now they really do have to cut programs. They really do have to make some difficult decisions. And that having some additional latitude to do that simply is in the best interest of students. So I would conclude there and thank the committee for the opportunity to be here this morning.
Thank you, Commissioner. If there are no questions for the commissioner. The next person that's listed to testify is Carl Rose. Is Carl here?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. Well, this is one way to kickstart our morning, isn't it? I'd like to share some comments with you. AASB supports the bill. We are faced with some difficult problems and decisions that need to be made at the local level. And I'd like to share some of that perspective. We understand the issue behind the creation of tenure. The whole idea of protecting academic freedom and some of the protections therein. Our current law allows us to be able to non-retain tenure teachers for reasons of incompetence, immorality, non-compliance with laws and statutes, and decline enrollment. And I think the attitude or reason behind decline enrollment was a logical conclusion that if you had a decline enrollment situation, decreased revenue would follow. What we're experiencing now is that enrollments are increasing, but our inability to keep pace and the loss of buying power under a $60,000 instructional unit is having a severe impact at the local level. So those kinds of situations historically are bringing us to this hard position that we're in now where we have to make some decisions. The association's concerned about the cost of operating and maintaining a school program, students' needs, the workforce, quality workforce. There are a number of issues that are before us right now. We're having some difficulty. We're looking for some relief. From what we can see, one of the principal questions that we need to ask ourselves at the local level, and we have been wrestling with doing that, what will drive these reduced workforce efforts? Will it be the programmatic needs of kids, or will it be seniority or tenure or whatever? Now, I do want to say that this bill will give us one more opportunity to take a look at how we reduce our staff. I do want to state that the latitude that we receive will not be carte blanche. Every one of our school districts have locally negotiated agreements, and I think those negotiated agreements will provide the shape and structure as to how we reduce tenured and non-tenured staff. Those items will be negotiable, and I believe that even if we can get to discuss those issues of tenured teachers and how we go about doing reducing those staff, I think issues of retraining, I think issues of in-service, and you know, those things can be discussed. Currently, we can't even talk about those things because you simply cannot lay tenured teachers off. So I think we're looking for some latitude there. And aside from all of this, we still have the whole issue of due process. And in my view, I think due process is probably more stringent. I wouldn't say more stringent, but at least it does provide some protection that you have to be judicious in any decisions you make at the local level. I do want to say that we object to Section 2 of this bill. I believe Representative Davis has identified that as a problem area. We don't want to create two classes of people. I think what Section 2 does is it says we grandfather this group in. It doesn't provide us with any relief. It doesn't give us the latitude that we need. I would like to take the time to share with you one of the concerns that we've received. I think this is in your packet, and this comes from Wrangell. Wrangell wrote you a letter. He spent $54,000 on the case to try to remove a tenured teacher. Okay? At $54,000, as I understand the issue, they tried to use the enrollment clause. They had a decrease in enrollment. They had two schools. They had a decrease in enrollment at one school. They had an increase at another. They tried to reduce their workforce as a tenured teacher. They tried to lay off a tenured teacher under the suggestion that they had experienced a decline in enrollment. It cost them $54,000. During that trial, and I want to quote in the second page of that letter, paragraph 2, during a court case, the judge presented the teacher's attorney with a hypothetical case. Imagine, told the judge, that a tenured teacher was taught shorthand, has taught shorthand for 15 years. Student interest in the course dwindled over the years. Teacher was only trained to teach shorthand. Only had experience teaching shorthand, but now there was not a single student who wished to take shorthand. Was the district required to continue to employ the shorthand teacher? The response absolutely stated the teacher's attorney. As illogical as it may seem to some, she argued, it was the law. That's the rationale. It was the law. The programmatic needs of kids have got to override just the law if the law isn't applicable. And that's what we're asking you to do today. We're asking you to take a good look at this law and try to imagine, we don't even have to pick the worst case scenario. I mean, we can conjure up a lot of scenarios for you. What I do want to say is that this bill gives us an opportunity to at least discuss the issue. And I know there's going to be a lot of opposition on this bill. It's going to cause you some strain, I understand. But the issue has to be addressed. I think in the coming years, there'll be more and more support for such a bill on behalf of students. So I would ask you to consider that. And once again, we have some concerns about Section 2. And we object to that section because it really doesn't give us the latitude that we need. I've put my testimony in writing for you, so if you have any questions, I'll try to answer them. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Carl. Representative Betty Davis has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I read your testimony last night, and many things that you stated in there I agree with. I was on the school board for 8 years, and I understand some of the various problems that various school districts have. And I would understand your concern about Section 2 of the bill also. What I don't understand is that as we talk about teachers, being art teachers and science teachers and whatever they are, but the overall thing is that teachers are teachers. They learn how to teach. And who's to say that an art teacher who might have taught art for many, many years couldn't necessarily make a good first grade, second grade teacher, kindergarten teacher, because first of all, they go to school to be teachers. And their subject matter is secondary to that. And so somebody coming on non-tenured and maybe had 1 year on simply because they were K through six or whatever and you want to maintain them does not necessarily mean that that person would be the best teacher. And what would happen with this particular bill, it actually wouldn't take that into consideration. And besides that, an art teacher could come in and they have all of these different things that they can use, plus all the teaching skills that they develop over the years, and still have an opportunity to go back and pick up any additional information that they need. That's why I say it should be the school district working these problems out and not us mandating this particular law, because if we want to look at tenure, let's look at tenure. And let's get rid of it if we feel that we don't need it. But don't put this out there and say we're doing this to make better programs, because I do not agree with that. Would you not agree that teachers are taught to teach before they're taught anything else? That's what they go to school for, 4 years, to learn how to teach. And 15 years of experience have to count for something, as opposed to somebody walking in the door brand new.
Further comments or questions by members of the committee, Representative Lincoln?
I'd like to respond to that, Mr. Chair. If you'd like to go ahead, and then I want to add to that.
Thank you. In my response, I would have to say that if a school district were going to go out and hire teachers for a specific need, they'd go out and look for the best qualified person. I would agree with that. And I think that 15 years of any teacher, it doesn't have to be an art teacher, I think any teacher, should, you know, those people should have some consideration. Those issues can be dealt with in negotiations at the local level if we're given the ability to do that under the law. Currently, we can't discuss those kinds of things because it's simply not an issue. We don't have the latitude to lay people off, tenure people off, under the law. So in response, I would say I would tend to agree with you that a teacher is a teacher, and regardless whether they're a math teacher or a philosophy teacher, they do have some experience. I would agree with that. Whether that particular teacher meets the needs or the programmatic needs of the school, the students, as determined by the school board, that's a question that needs to be decided locally. They're asking for some latitude, and that's what this bill is meant to do. And I would agree with some of the earlier testimony. I don't think there's any fail-safe way that we can go about providing justice the local level. I don't think we can mandate that. But I do think we do need some latitude, and the actual, as I mentioned, the actual shape or design of a layoff plan, I think, is a negotiated item. It can be done at the local level. And any guidance or latitude we can get through legislation, we'll pursue that.
Representative Lincoln was recognized for you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, this bill does not prohibit if there is somebody in there that is an art teacher, that there is a reduction in force, that this does not prohibit that employer from holding that art teacher if they feel that that individual can teach first and second grade. It does not mandate that they be replaced. It just gives the school districts that decision, empowers the school districts to make that decision. And I will use as an example, in Rampart, last year, we had a teacher that was hired for secondary education. And that individual stayed with us for 1 month and then said he was going to resign because he did not know that he was going to teach secondary education. He was had his certificate in elementary education, special education, and did not feel that he was providing the students in Rampart in the secondary classes the opportunity that one who were certified in that field would. That he said very clearly, and I went up and talked with him, that I could stay here for the whole school year, but I will tell you that the students would not learn what they should be learning because that was not my background in what the way in which I was trained. This is not my background, and I would be cheating the students here. And I think we have to recognize that. But all this does is give the school district the opportunity for choice.
Thank you, Representative Lincoln. Representative Miller, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm hearing a lot about teacher tenure and talking about their qualifications to teach certain grades and so forth, but I'm looking at the bill and seems to me the thing we should be discussing primarily is the amendment that would cause, that would allow reduction in staff if it's caused by budgetary or fiscal circumstances. So that's what my question is going to be about. I think in all fairness, if we look at the existing law, numbers 1, 2, 3, it seems to me that we have some standard by which to judge when a teacher is incompetent, a standard by which to judge immorality. I mean, aside from what an objective observer would do, we're looking at someone, for example, immorality, it's commission of an act, which the laws of the state, under the laws of the state, constitutes a crime. So we're talking about some kind of provable standard. When we talk about noncompliance with the school laws and regulations or bylaws of the department, we can look at that. But my question, Mr. Rose, is, as the employer, I just see that all they have to be able to say is that we have a budgetary or fiscal circumstance. And I'm wondering if the, is that the latitude you're talking about? Rather than setting a threshold, rather than talking about an emergency situation where there is a certain percentage reduction in funds to the district, is it because you feel that you need that kind of latitude in the law, that you don't want specifics? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, and through the chair. The reason that we're dealing with this sort of language is because we haven't experienced an actual reduction in dollars. We're still receiving $60,000 per instructional unit over the last 6 years. We've lost approximately, or in excess of 40% in buying power, and the cuts that we're experiencing across the state are not as a result of the actual dollar figure reducing, it's inflation, the increased cost of operating, those kinds of issues. So I don't know how to exactly describe the standard. I would take any recommendations you might have. If there's a standard that you want to place in legislation, you know, we take a look at that. But how do you describe a declining revenue situation when, in fact, you've been held at $60,000 for 6 years? As we testified yesterday over on the Senate side in favor of TRS, we were encouraging a TRS split. Our concerns there were back in 1987 when we received this new instructional unit allotment of $60,000. That was to incur some of the costs of TRS. Well, since that time, we haven't been increased. TRS has taken off, as has everything else. The actual dollars that we receive, if we receive another $60,000 unit this year, and I hope we don't because we're pushing for 63, but if we receive another $60,000, we won't experience a decline in actual dollar revenue, but we will experience a decline in terms of buying power once again. So that's the problem. In terms of language and a standard, I would work with the committee on any kind of language you want to come up with. But how do you describe the fact that though you haven't lost a dollar figure in terms of $60,000, we have decimated many of our programs across the state? That has come as a result of a financial exigency. You can call it whatever you will. I agree with your concern, and I just didn't know how we'd word it. So this language seemed to be fair.
Please continue, Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is it true that approximately 70% of the school funding goes to teacher salaries? Is that correct, or is that for all of staffing, including administrators' salaries?
When we're talking about employees, that's teaching, certificated, non-certified, and that figure is somewhere between 70% and 85%. That's, you know, schools in general, that's a labor-intensive, service-oriented business, and I'll have to state to you that the laying off of teachers is not the answer to this financial exigency or this downturn in revenue. School boards don't teach children, teachers do. But our ability to manage our budgets and open those schools next September will have to be contingent on being able to afford our cost of operating. And so this is not simply to lay off teachers. Teachers have protections under this law. It'll entail certificated employees as well. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions for Mr. Rose from members of the committee? Thank you,
Mr.
Rose.
Chairman.
This time I'd like to ask Don Oberg if you'd come forward, please. You're twins, huh?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I have asked Willie Henderson to come with me because some of the questions that may come up, he will have more expertise, being that he is staff, and if it's appropriate with the chair.
Perfectly fine, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am Don Oberg with NEA Alaska, and to my right is Willie Henderson, staff at NEA Alaska. We have a position paper before you. And any Alaska position paper will state we're somewhat disappointed, but at least the discussion has finally come to the issue that really before us, and Representative Davis identified early on. We're not talking about an issue of financial emergency. We're talking about a run on the tenure law. And there's no other way to interpret this, but, and I will try to explain how that has to be so. The bill before you allows a school district, if they decide there's a financial emergency, or not even emergency, or any physical circumstances, to lay off a tenured teacher for no other reason. And I suppose if we looked at one of the recent school districts, I believe financially put in about, and I'm not disagreeing with this decision, but with the administration, the principals, I think the total would be something like $600,000 of the total cost over the next 2 years. Well, that's an awful lot of classroom teachers. And I suppose they could say, gee, we have to lay off tenured teachers because we gave the administration a reasonable and responsible raise. There are some questions, I think, representatives, that the testimony before you has made it very clear. This is not a financial emergency. We have, for at least 3 years, made it clear to members of the legislature that if there is a circumstance where there is a financial emergency in which there is not adequate funding, that we are prepared to sit down with the HESC committee or any other committee and look at legislation. But when we talk about financial emergency, we're talking about the costs that are not directed to the classroom teacher. There is a letter in your package, I think most interesting, from one of the a superintendent who will go unmentioned. But I will assure you that if that superintendent were simply to say he would cut his salary in half, he could still hire a brand new teacher and still make more than the average teacher salary in the state of Alaska. That is an option, but that is not what we're asking. There are other circumstances. There are, obviously, we hear the apocryphal stories about teachers teaching out of their field of their position. I will tell you that if you go back and look at the testimony, one of the biggest concerns that any Alaska has ever had is teachers who are forced to teach out of their expertise. If you believe that a teacher wants to teach in a position in which that teacher is not prepared, and I think Representative Lincoln expressed it very well with the person you were referring to, that is not our goal in mind. We do not want to teach something in which we're not prepared. Number one, if we do, our evaluations are probably not going to be nearly as good as in a position we are prepared. Another letter from a superintendent lists all these terrible, terrible situations. I would suggest that the school district ought to look at the hiring practices of that administration to make judgments based on what would be expectation. Obviously, that superintendent or whomever did the hiring was not being very responsible. And I think the most telling is Commissioner Cubby's remarks. And I'm going to try to quote him exactly. And you can see from this our concern. Most school districts, in most cases, almost most of them will make good judgments. Laws are for those protections for those against who will not make good judgments. Now, if there is a committee, a subcommittee in which to look at what to do if there is a financial emergency, of which there is an actual reduction, in which other programs have not been added, I remember a school district I believe 6 years ago, 7 years ago, they put something like $400,000 into computers. Then there was a budget reduction. And then they came back and said, gosh, we've got to lay off teachers. Well, we said, whoa, how about just not spending $400,000 on computers? Again, we are not an organization that does not want expenditures for student programs. But we are not absolutely convinced that a district administration always uses the best judgment. And we certainly cannot understand how a statement that would suggest that if a school district determines that there's a financial need, that they then can lay off junior teachers. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Oberg. Mr. Oberg, I find it it offends me a little bit to have you make a statement impugning the motives of the person who introduces this legislation. You said it was a run on the tenure law, and I don't believe that's Representative Lincoln's intent.
Mr. Chairman, I do apologize. I was not referring to Representative Lincoln. I believe that her intent is clear, and she stated that. And we agree that if there is financial emergencies, there may be a need to make corrections. That is not our, and that certainly was not my intent. But I was referring to some of the letters. There's a letter in here very clear in support of this legislation that, if I may, this is a comment that is in support of the legislation from an administrator. It says, if I may quote, "We can employ excellent teachers at half the cost, and some of our veterans who are burned out and coasting to retirement. There are throughout here evidence. I do not, and I truly apologize, I do not impugn the integrity of the representative. I believe that the intent, and as we spoke, as we said earlier, there may be reasons, and I talked to some of the representatives yesterday, there may be reason to, in fact, have a committee look at a bill under certain circumstances. But what I'm suggesting is that some of the arguments that are put forth in support through these letters, I don't believe have much to do with financial emergency. They have to do with a run on tenure.
Thank you for the clarification. Representative Sherry Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, Don, partly a question for you, partly a statement, I guess. Is it not true that aside from the tenure protections offered in the law, that there are a couple of other protections offered to teachers as well, and that is the due process that Carl referred to earlier, and also the de novo trial part of that, extension of that process. Is that a correct statement?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis, may I ask Billy Anderson to respond?
Yes, the de novo trial is a part of the protection provided to teachers, but that is as a result of the law that is in place today. With the addition of the financial circumstances, the budgetary circumstances, the courts are tied to saying, well, if the board decides that comments Representative Miller made earlier regarding the standards that are there. At this point in the amended section, there are no standards that are applicable. So the court has no way to judge the intent of the legislature or make a determination different from that of the administration in their decision. And if I may just add one other comment, it was mentioned in an earlier statement about the Wrangell situation where they spent $54,000 and the hypothetical question. I would urge the committee to look at the total result of that case. First of all, the judge ruled that the teacher should not be non-retained, and the judge also ruled that there was not a reduction in enrollment. In fact, using the school district's own argument, the judge said that there was an increase in enrollment. So the decision was made based on the facts in the case, not the hypothetical situation. And clearly, a person who's writing in support of this legislation would use the hypothetical situation to make their point. The issue, once again, we need some standards. With the addition of the amendment that addresses the school district's authority to determine when there's a reduction in enrollment and the financial or budgetary consideration, there aren't any standards left that the court has to turn to. The other standards are there, and the, much of the earlier testimony was dealing with the appropriateness of a teacher in a classroom. It doesn't deal with the need to, quote unquote, reduce staffing because of budgetary emergency or financial emergency. And that's the type of standard that we need in order to even consider this piece of legislation to be a way to proceed, because at this point there's an open, a blank check for any school district to exercise their prerogative.
A follow-up, Representative Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I just wanted to make the point. First of all, I hear constantly from people who say, let's just eliminate tenure and all our problems will be solved. And I know better because I've been there. And I know that even it isn't that easy with all of the processes that one has to go through to non-retain a non-tenured teacher, because I've been through that exercise as well in Ketchikan. When somebody objects to being non-retained, you still have to go through the process, et cetera. My point being, regardless of what people say to me, I constantly say back, no, that's not appropriate to get rid of tenure. And not only that, even if I thought it was a good idea, it wouldn't solve the problems that you're referring to. And some people, you know, you can go through the gamut of what people are saying this is going to solve. All I want to do, however, is do what you're suggesting, which is have some kind of an emergency provision, because I believe we're going to be in a state of emergency in this state with our fiscal problems for several years to come, at least. And I would like to be able to do that. And with that, Madam Chair, if at some point when we're through with all the testimony and whatever, I don't know what your intent is with this, but I would like to state that I believe that this committee would be the appropriate committee to work on any language changes to this bill rather than moving it to the next committee, which I don't think has as much expertise in some of these areas as this committee has. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Davis. Representative Gonzalez is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can see that we've got a bill here that's going to create a lot of controversy and a lot of talk. I just wanted to, more of a statement to Mr. Holberg. He said something about that, I hear this all the time, and I'm wondering, and I just wanted to bring something up. We talked about comparing, and I think he said something like, if Commissioner Covey would be willing to cut his wages, we could probably hire and have another teacher on that. Which brings a point, and I hear this a lot, and we hear a lot about the teachers that make a lot of money, that if they were willing to cut their pay, we could hire more teachers. And I hear this throughout the field of any organization, of any career. And I just want to make sure that if all of us would be willing to take a cut in money, we could probably hire more teachers and hire more of other careers. The thing is that most of us don't want to give up what we already have, and that includes the teachers. The only ones that I see that are volunteers really are the school board members, you know, and they don't get anything except a headache, and a heartache too, by the way.
Mr. Chairman, may I respond?
If I may,
I want to clarify, I was not referring to Commissioner of Education Covey. In fact, I think he probably is one of the lower paid superintendents in the state, which is somewhat surprising to commissioners, but I was referring to one of the persons who wrote a letter here saying that there had to be a reduction, that this superintendent had to have the flexibility. But I'm telling you that that's a little bit duplicitous, and that I know what that superintendent makes. And he is certainly one of the highest paid superintendents in the state. And for him to suggest that there's a financial emergency is somewhat, I think, unreasonable. I just am trying to suggest that maybe the rule that the letters that you have before you in support of this bill may not really reflect the public concerned.
Thank you, Mr. Oberg. Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate some of your concerns on the wording of the language. It's a little hard for me to sit here, though, and listen to you say that there's not a fiscal emergency when a couple weeks ago, and we all think there is a fiscal problem. I mean, whether it rises to an emergency standard or not, I don't know, but you can't come in and say we have to have $67,000 or $70,000 dollars because we haven't had a raise since 1986 and then say there's no justification for this, there's no fiscal emergency. Granted, there's a lot of latitude in where the different districts spend their money, and I understand the concerns, but to say that we've got, I'm a little concerned about that because I could go right out and say, well, good, NEA now says I don't have to support $63,000 because there's no real fiscal emergency here, and I want.
If I may represent that,
yes, please.
Again, I think that's what I reflected. I said there isn't. I said if there were an emergency, what I've said is that no district really has had a situation where they had a reduction in funding. My letter before you is very clear. If, in fact, there is a significant reduction in funding, and if, in fact, maybe a third party, a neutral third party, could say, look, there's a serious matter here, maybe there's a drafting possible to do this. But as long as there are districts that, in fact, are hiring new teachers, then it's difficult to see how they could claim that they're in a financial emergency. And the bill that's before you does not even say a financial emergency. It says it's a financial or fiscal circumstance. And we would like to know what that means.
Mr. Chairman. And I agree with you. I think there needs to be some clarification. I'm just concerned that even with, I mean, you're making the argument, Mr. Rolls made a good point that, sure, there's more money. I think there can be a fiscal emergency, even though the $60,000 instructional unit. And I think you guys would agree that there's definitely problems right now that are because we have, even though there is the same amount of money, realistically there's a problem.
Mr. Chairman, may I respond also? We would concur that there's a need for additional financial support from this body to fund public education. In fact, it's our position that the answer to this issue isn't changing the law, it's an appropriate funding, and that we need to push the $63,000 instruction unit. And when you get into the situation of laying off tenured teachers, there's already the latitude that is exercised in many of our school districts where you lay off non-tenured teachers routinely because you are uncertain about your next year's financial situation. And we aren't arguing against that. That's the latitude that's there, and boards and superintendents exercise that latitude every year. In 1986, when there was a 10% cut in the funding for all programs across the state, that was after there was letting of contracts, there was a collaborative effort by school district employees to deal with that. There was an effort to address that issue. There isn't even that contemplation at this point in time, and yet we're talking about laying off tenured teachers. So I think our concern about this bill is that we're taking a meat cleaver to a problem that can be resolved in a more appropriate way. And more appropriately, we think, increase the funding. There's the latitude of laying off non-tenured teachers now. There's also the possibility of, if we get into the financial emergency situation as we did in 1986, there's an opportunity to work collaboratively with the bodies to resolve that matter. And at that time, teachers and other school district employees gave up raises that offset that impact across the state. That wasn't a universal situation, but there were that latitude that took place around the state. And teachers came forward and gave their share to fix that situation.
Thank you. It's my intention to put this in a subcommittee. I don't, we do have a person on teleconference, Dorothy Cox, who's been waiting. I imagine Mr. McPeters could really came back. Dorothy Cox, did you need to make some comments before we put this in a subcommittee, or could you wait until next Tuesday when it comes back before the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the legislature. I would certainly appreciate making some comments this morning, as I don't.
ahead with your comments then.
Thank you. My concern about number five, necessary reduction of staff is determined by the employer in this bill, and I'd like to first commend Representative Lincoln for having the courage to bring something of this magnitude forward. But I do have a concern with it because my concern is that the teachers might be the first to go. And I think that before we consider laying off of any teachers or letting any teachers go, I'm just not convinced that this is the right way to go. Perhaps we need to look at changing the tenure laws themselves as opposed to putting this amendment to this bill. There's certainly a decline in revenue. There's certainly a need for additional funding for the school districts. But I'm just not really convinced that this is what we really want to be doing at this time. There's other ways that we can look at a reduction in our budget if we're in a crisis situation, which I know that we're in a very bad situation, but I don't think it's to the extent that we need to look at getting rid of our teachers. I'm just concerned that they would be the first one to go, and what we really need is qualified teachers. I think we have a good 2,000 and our teachers here in the Anchorage School District, and I'm just not convinced that that is the way to go. I'd like to ask the maker of the bill, of the amendment, when it says by employer, I'm concerned with that clause as well as well, that would more or less give the principals the authority to make a decision on letting teachers go, and the clause does not address emergency situations. It just addresses budgetary or physical circumstances, and I do have a problem with that. And thank you.
Now, thank you, Dorothy Cox. I think unless some committee member has a question or comment to make, ends our discussion of this legislation today. I'd like to refer this to a subcommittee of chaired by Sherry Davis and with Representative Lincoln and Representative Miller, and ask you to please bring it back to us by next Tuesday. We have confirmation hearings on two board members is all we have scheduled that day, and they're going to be teleconferenced, and I don't think it will take us the full time, so we'll bring it back then. And at this time, I'll turn the gavel over to Representative Lincoln for the bill that follows this.
Thank you. We had from yesterday, HJR, Representative Sherry Davis.
Is it possible we could have just a two-minute recess? I need to ask the sponsor of the bill a question.
We will have a two-minute recess. Yeah, we'll come back to order here. Thank you. We will come back to order here. We are now on HJR 58, and as I announced yesterday that we would be on a listen only on teleconference, and we did receive quite a lengthy testimony from, or not lengthy testimony, but a number of testimonies from individuals that have been made a part of your packet. And if the sponsor, Representative Boyer, would please join us at the table, we will continue then to hear from, if the representative would like to again make some opening remarks, and then we will hear from the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think we kind of covered most of the issues yesterday. I'm more prepared to answer questions if members have. I don't have any additional comments to make.
Okay, are there any questions of committee members? Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did want to seek clarification yesterday through the testimony. We were given information that confused the issue to me as regards whether or not FDA is allowing testing of RU 486 in the United States. Representative Boyer, do you know for a fact what is happening in that regard?
Madam Chairman, the only I found that the testimony was a bit contradictory too, and don't know for a fact other than what's presented by the National Right to Life Committee testimony from yesterday. I don't know other than that that FDA is or isn't allowing. It appears from the National Right to Life Committee testimony that, and it's footnoted, so it's hard, you know, for me to know whether or not it's inaccurate. It's suggested it's accurate because of the footnoting that the FDA is allowing non-abortion related testing to occur.
Further questions?
No, thank you.
Representative Panda.
Yes. I had the same question because I think it's important to know, depending on, and I'm not comfortable with the language in the resolve because I don't know what supports introduction means. In the normal process of drugs being introduced into the country, I think there normally is a ban on personal use, which appears to be what there is on this particular drug, and then until it is tested. And I don't know the procedures for testing as far as whether FDA has to go out and do the testing or individual companies apply to them to do the testing. And if it's true that it is being allowed for testing in this country, and that because of political reasons the company is not shipping it here, that's a different consideration than if it's actually being prohibited from being tested by the FDA. And I think it's important to have some clarification on that.
Did you wish to comment on that?
Well, like I say, I've read the backup, and you know, given the footnoting, my guess is that if we looked into it further, we would find that the FDA does, as a policy, allow for the importation for non-abortion-related testing. And I was actually impressed by the National Right to Life Committee testimony, in as much as it begs testing, I think, for the abortion-related issues as well. They paint a fairly grisly and gruesome tale, and if you believe that part of the testimony, it begs for additional testing, it begs for additional information, it begs out to us to get that appropriate research to be done. It's less well footnoted, and but I mean, if the atrocities that they suggest are attendant to the drug's application, if those things are true, then we clearly need further research in those areas, in all areas, before we allow the general use and availability.
Further questions? Representative
yes.
Miller.
Madam Chair, yesterday I alluded to amendment, and at this point I'm still considering that, but in regard to page 2, line 5, the phrase is because of its significant medical value. I've read a testimony and looked at the materials in the packet, and perhaps there's potential medical value. I don't know that I've been convinced that it has significant medical value. I'm just questioning that word. I think by the fact that you're asking that this be introduced for, well, you don't even say introduced for scientific testing, so I need to ask you further exactly what is meant by this sentence. But in regard to significant medical value, if indeed your intent is that it be introduced into the United States for one of the purposes to be scientific testing, I think that's the reason you, I would assume, want scientific testing to ascertain the significance. So I think that word is premature. And if I could then, Madam Chair,
continue
and ask, because be it resolved does not indicate for exactly what purposes or all purposes, could the sponsor state what this resolution would support introduction of RU 486? Introduction in what way, what purposes would the sponsor hope to have gained through this?
Representative Boyd.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Well, initially I had hoped that we would have not only introduction for full research applications, but also for clinical application where appropriate. And that was my original intent, was not only research, but also clinical application after the FDA approval process, which they would either find it safe and effective and then allow for the clinical application, or it would be found not to be safe and effective. But that was my original intent.
Representative Miller, clarification then. Are you saying that, first of all, the introduction would be first for the testing to take, the scientific investigation to take place, and then depending on the outcome of that testing, to then allow for the introduction of the abortion pill, as it's commonly referred to? You know, I have some concerns. We heard yesterday that the AMA, this was testimony. Some of these things are contradictory in what we've heard. We've heard that the AMA supports the FDA ban on that clinical use because of some of the complications. For myself, as a concerned citizen, a representative, and as a woman, I look back to the recent findings with silicone breast implants. Now, for years, I would say most of my adult life, this has seemed to be a very common procedure, and now we're hearing testimony of the very significant implications for women's health with the ingredients of silicone finding its way into other parts of a woman's body. And going back maybe 10 years, 12, 20 years, you have in the popular media, such as a Phil Donahue show, promotions of, well, let's have a dermatologist come in and tell you how you can improve your appearance, and let's have a plastic surgeon come in and tell women, hey, you can shop for a new bus line today at your friendly plastic surgeon. I think that it's responsible of us to watch for these warnings that we're hearing, and I would really like to know if indeed the AMA has agreed with this ban for that clinical use. Now, it's my understanding from other materials in the packet that the AMA is requesting testing. And I can see in the medical community, because of the well, the competition, the kind of, science and research always wants to reach out for anything new to study it, and many discoveries lead to other things, and I'll just allude to the nuclear weapons, meaning the atomic bomb, and then you can also use nuclear energy for peaceful means and for power. So it's possible that with testing they can find something else. But my greatest concern is that we do consider this seriously, and that there is a tremendous amount of political rhetoric, political action focused on this. And I think women have every right to consider their health. But I think before we precipitously go into something just because of some heavy political pressure, those are my concerns, and I appreciate the time to say that. I really think that we need to resolve by asking the AMA and by asking the FDA for clarification on whether or not that testing is actually being permitted within the United States, and whether or not the AMA supports the FDA ban on that clinical use.
Representative Sherry Davis and then Representative Gonzalez. Okay, Madam Chair, I let me float at least one amendment here and potentially a couple of others depending on how the discussion goes. The First Amendment, and I'm sorry I don't have these written, but it would be easy to follow. On page 2, line 5, I would, that line would read as follows. United States to research its potential medical value. Remove the words because of, put to research in its place. Remove the word significant, put potential in its place.
And the line now reads, be it resolved that the Alaska State Legislature supports introduction of RU 486 into the United States to research its potential medical value.
Is that offered as amendment?
That is amendment number one.
Okay, is there an objection to amendment number one?
Objection.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Objections for the purpose of further refining that language. I would offer a friendly amendment to the amendment to, how about for scientific research? You have two research, but if it were, be it resolved that the Alaska State Legislature supports introduction of RU 486 into the United States for scientific research into its potential medical value.
I think let's respond.
Representative Foy.
To respond to the first proposed amendment, I think changing the word significant to potential is fine. And I would, it's perhaps semantics, but I would rather have you finish out the sentence so that it would read United States because of its potential medical value for all appropriate research. I would add, I think that's an important clause, and if you wanted to say for all appropriate scientific research, I think it gets at it, but I'm not sure what scientific means and if that's an all-inclusive term or if it's an exclusive term. I'm not sure, and so perhaps you'd end up having to define what you mean by scientific.
Would you, Representative Boyer, would you read that one more time if you've got that written so that we can get this exactly?
Sure, let me see if I can do it here. Be it resolved that the Alaska State Legislature supports introduction of RU 486 into the United States because of its potential medical value for all appropriate research.
Appropriate scientific research?
Well, again, I'm not sure what scientific means, but that was the second part of it.
This is an amendment that was offered by Representative Sherry Davis.
I will accept.
Representative Mary Miller, is there any problem with that?
I'm wondering about the use of scientific. My concern, Madam Chair, is research. Students do research papers at the library, and would this allow just anyone to come in and say they're doing research? Could a clinic apply and say, I want to do research on women who will present themselves to our clinic in Juneau or Peters Creek or Chugiak. I'm just looking for a word that would imply that this would be a kind of highly skilled scientific research.
Madam Chairman, I think in reading the testimony from the manufacturer and yet some of yesterday's testimony, that first of all, the manufacturer is highly selective in their introduction of the drug for very specific kinds of testing, and my guess is that if you kind of gave them an open invitation by saying all appropriate research, they're exclusive enough in their approach anyway that they're not going to. They have to acquiesce and provide the drug, and I think that they would be very selective, and you're not going to see. Based on what they've done in the past, being fairly, they're going to be careful about what they allow to be tested for.
Representative Boyer, if you would look at page 2, line 3, just above it, it says for scientific research studies in the United States. So it would then follow that same line of thought there.
Madam Chairman, if you wanted to amend the proposed language to say appropriate scientific, for all appropriate scientific research, I think it probably does follow.
Madam Chair, I think a better wording that's a little clearer, if I can withdraw my previous amendment
and
start over.
What I was going to suggest is if we kind of clear the table here.
Okay.
Amendment number one has been withdrawn. Let's hear the proposed new amendment.
Madam Chair, how about if we say, be it resolved that the Alaska State Legislature supports introduction of RU 486 into the United States for all appropriate scientific research of its potential medical value.
Reads well.
Representative Miller, since you had concerns about this, any comments on it?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Objection?
No objection, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Comment is that I think that approach is what I had intended.
Okay. Then that is offered as amendment number one. Is there any objection to amendment number one, Representative Carney?
I'd like to object for the purposes of discussion.
Please continue.
Perhaps I withdraw my objection. Is it the, oh, thank you. Is it the sponsor's intent that it only be brought into the country for scientific research, or is it your intent that it could be made available for use as an abortion pill?
Madam Chairman, as I originally stated, it was my earlier and original intent that it be brought in for full research and when found safe and effective by the FDA as a result of the research that takes place first, that it would then become clinically available. I think that that's, I think that after the research is done several years from now, that it probably becomes clinically available anyway, that the FDA goes ahead through its process. And California was interesting. When they adopted their language a couple of years ago, did add a phrase encouraging the additional, let me just read this for the information. California went on with an additional whereas, or resolved, and said that the legislature of the state of California encourages all qualified investigators, companies, and businesses which decide to test RU486 to choose California as a site for clinical trials for all research associated with RU486 and to submit the data from the clinical trials to the Food and Drug Administration. So they went another step and said that if, as you investigate this, we want you to submit the data to the Food and Drug Administration and then go ahead with clinical trials. That's the next step. I don't know that this committee is prepared to do that.
Representative Carney, do you still hold
your objection? No, my objections are withdrawn.
Okay, then we have amendment number one before us. Further objection? Hearing none, amendment number...
Objection, I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Representative Miller.
I still have the problem that in the, thank you, in the whereas of, on page two, line two, we still have that contradictory information. It says that the Food and Drug Administration has thwarted the availability of RU486 for scientific research. I suppose this is something that does, you know, could easily defeat this bill on the House floor. And if we're working to prepare a piece of legislation that will lend its way through the House.
Madam Chairman,
I have, I see that we're improving the language on the be it resolved, and I'm objecting to that. But I'm pointing out to the committee that the whereas just above it is contradictory to what we're putting in here.
Representative Boyan,
I would just respond that if you added the word at between four and scientific, if you had the word all, you probably have a very accurate statement given the testimony of the National Right to Life group. Because they indicated that the effect of the ban was to use the word here, thwart the availability for for abortion-related scientific research studies. So it's if you add the word all, then I think you have an accurate statement of the whereas clause.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then is it my understanding, Representative Boyer, that you do know for a fact that the FDA has not thwarted the availability for some scientific research?
I prefaced my right, tried to base my comment, or did base my comment, on National Right to Life's testimony from yesterday. I, again, don't know it to be true or not true. That's based on the testimony that was provided to the committee.
Thank you. Is there further, does the objection still hold on amendment number one?
I will remove the objection.
Okay, if they're Representative Carney.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move amendment number two to add.
Well, amendment number one is before us, and if there is no objection on that, then we have moved amendment number one. Representative Carney.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move amendment number two to add all between four and scientific research as suggested by the party.
Objection.
There is an objection.
Madam
Representative
Chairman.
Hanley.
I understand what Representative Boyer's tried to say, but if you read it, it says issued an import that has thwarted the availability of RU-46 for all scientific research studies. And what that says now is that they haven't allowed any. And that's not
That's not the intent.
That's right.
What you want is some, and I think actually what we probably, I mean, I would prefer to get that particular question answered, if we could, and find out from FDA exactly what the import ban does, exactly, or the import alert. It sounds like it bans it from personal use. Find out if it bans it from clinical use. Find out if they are able to have testing done for non-abortion and for abortion. My understanding actually is that it is allowed to be used for scientific research for all purposes, both abortion-related and others, and that it's political reasons and pressure that the manufacturer has decided not to. But I think that's important to find out the actual process that this particular thing goes through. And also the fact that the there's a statement that it isn't clear in here that the AMA supports the import ban or import alert. And I think what that's insinuating is that they do support not allowing it for personal use until it's had its scientific testing. And I think that's where we're going with the resolution. And I think that's the proper place to go with the resolution. But I mean, I think those questions need to be answered, both the AMA's position and Food and Drug Administration.
Representative Sherry Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess there's a million things we could do with this thing. I am trying to avoid having to do them on the floor of the House of Representatives because I think we have a lot bigger fish to fry. However, I am in support of this resolution. If we can get it to a forum where we can get the majority to vote for it, I think we're in fat city here. So, I have a second amendment to offer in that vein that I don't think hurts the intent of the resolution, and I will, if I may, I will offer amendment number two.
Is an amendment number two. Oh,
I'm sorry.
No, Representative Carney.
I would like to ask Commissioner Nwabali to withdraw my amendment.
Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Representative Sherry Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My amendment ignores the whereas because I think we can deal with that later if we need to. That's just a statement of fact. If it's not factual, we can correct it. But on page one, lines 5 through 9, I would remove those three whereases. And on line 12, the last word other, I would change to many.
Just for clarification, you said lines 5 through 9.
Oh, I'm sorry, 5 through 11.
5 through 11.
5 through 11.
5 through 11, and then continue.
And then the second part of that amendment is on line 12, where the last word is other, I would put many. All I think that does, if I might, Madam Chair, is it takes out some of the language that is explosive in this amendment. It doesn't do harm to, I mean, in this resolution, doesn't do harm to the purpose of the amendment. It merely takes some of the hot buttons away, and if with that, I would feel that it should have fairly general support.
Is there any objection?
Objection.
To amendment number two. Objection, Representative Miller.
Yes, Madam Chair. As you see, be it resolved, and I don't have.
Are you on page two?
Yes, I'm sorry. The be it resolved clause is the only, you know, there's only one be it resolved clause is on page two, lines 4 and 5. I don't have the exact wording because Representative Sherry Davis had worked very hard to put some wording together. And if we could read that again, the reason I'm saying that is if we take out all of lines 5 through 11 on page 1, it certainly removes the hot spots, but then the hot spots are indeed addressed in the be it resolved clause on page 2, lines 4 and 5, if indeed that amendment that we passed says for all scientific kind of research, we're referring back to the hot spots. So let's be honest with what we're doing here. That's my objection.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to bring it up for discussion, and if that's not, you know, if it's unacceptable, that's fine. It's not going to hurt my feelings. And
okay, is there any objection?
Madam Chair, the objection is sustained. I think that's what the political pressure is about. That's what all of this testimony is about. I think removing that hot spot is being hypocritical. And I don't mean that in any way. I'm saying for me, I object. For me to do that would be hypocritical because I understand this to be focusing on that. And I think those who vote on the House floor need to put their money where their mouth is or their vote where their heart is. And I think by removing that, and indeed that's the whole intent of this, is to allow for all of that scientific research. I think it's an integral part of this resolution.
Representative Boyer, did you have a comment to make on that?
I would just say that I tend to agree with the representative that you shouldn't avoid the full set of issues, and I wouldn't want to mislead anyone either. And I think by having the whereas there, you clearly understand what it is you're voting for, what kinds of research you're voting for. So I would suggest that you leave the whereas is in place.
Thank you. To the committee members here, it is 5 after 10, and I do have an appointment at 10 o'clock. So
I withdraw my amendment.
Thank you very much. Yes, you can withdraw your amendment. I would like to hold HJR 58 over until tomorrow, and we are also holding HB 290. We've got a heavy plate tomorrow, so if you all would be prompt, we will get going at exactly at 8:30. But before we leave, I haven't adjourned yet. Before we leave, there is an amendment that is being, not an amendment, a fiscal note that's being passed out for a bill that we passed yesterday on the CSHB 18. And what we did was we passed the second CS was amended to more closely match the SB 40, which was passed and was vetoed. Because the fiscal note, which was dated 2/18, was not written specific to the amendments in the second amendment, we passed out a bill with SB 40 fiscal note tagged along, and it does not go to finance, so we asked Department of Commerce to prepare a clean fiscal note for us on HES CS, and I'm just providing this for the members for their information to let them know that this is the fiscal note that is traveling with the bill, and if there is any objection to that, that is how we will proceed with that. If hearing no objection, that amendment the fiscal note is going to travel with it. I remind you also that on Monday that we are going to have a tour of the Lemon Creek Correctional Facilities and the Southeast Regional Resource Center, which is going to be extremely tight. There was some thought of dropping the Southeast Regional Resource Center and just having the Lemon Creek because it's going to be very, very tight by the time we leave here. I don't know if the committee has any objection to if we just take up the Lemon Creek Correctional Facility, because otherwise we're going to be scooting through there.